This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Homegrown terrorism is the subject of hearings underway on Capitol Hill, but not all threats to the American public are being considered, only those posed by Islamic radicals in this country. The congressional investigation is spearheaded by New York Representative Peter King, a Republican chairman of the House Committee on Homeland Security. King has been accused of racism and reviving McCarthyism by singling out the Muslim community, but he defends himself, says Muslim American radicalization poses a real danger to the country's safety. He pressed the idea at the opening of today's hearings.
Congressional investigation of Muslim American radicalization is the logical response to the repeated and urgent warnings which the Obama administration has been making in recent months. I have repeatedly said that the overwhelming majority of Muslim Americans are outstanding Americans and make enormous contributions to our country. But there are realities we can't ignore. For instance, the Pew poll, which said that 15% of Muslim American men between the age of 18 and 29 could support suicide bombings. This is the segment of the community Al-Qaeda is attempting to recruit.
Researchers at Duke University and the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill have been examining instances of terrorism and terrorism attempts by Muslim Americans. The schools, along with research institute RTI International, found that the number of Muslim American terrorist cases has actually dropped sharply since 2009. Joining me to talk about the congressional hearings and Islamic extremism in America is David Chancer. He is associate professor of the practice of public policy at Duke Sanford School. He is also director of the Triangle Center on Terrorism and Homeland Security, and that is the organization that authored the report on Muslim American terrorism. David, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
With me in the studio is Abdullah Entepli. He is the Muslim chaplain at Duke University and adjunct faculty of Islamic Studies at Duke. Welcome back to the program, Abdullah.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Good to have you. Also with me by phone is Ibrahim Musa. He is an associate professor of Islamic Studies at Duke University. Thanks for being with us, Ibrahim.
Hi.
David, let me start with you. The Triangle Center on Terrorism and Homeland Security released a report last month called Muslim American Terrorism Since 9/11 and Accounting. First of all, what was the goal of the research?
Well, the goal of the research is to try to place the nature of this threat in some sort of context and give facts to an area that is really dominated often by fear and also hyperbole. So we try to put some numbers to understand the extent of radicalization in America. And what we found is over almost a decade, about 161 individuals been prosecuted or charged or been engaged in joining a foreign force that has some sort of relation to terrorist violence. And, you know, to me, that suggests that we have a problem, and it's not a problem that can be brushed off, but it's also one that is not so pervasive that we have to be suspicious of an entire community or cast dispersion in that regard.
Well, what about the congressman's assertion that the target audience really is Muslim men living in this country?
Well, we have seen a Al-Qaeda move towards a tactic of recruitment in that regard, and Anwar al-Awlaki communicating with people via the Internet and Internet chat rooms. So it is a strategy, and we do know that young men are the ones who are most vulnerable to this ideology. So I don't think the premise of King's hearings are illegitimate. As a matter of fact, we've had many hearings in Congress and Senator Lieberman's committee and others that have explored this issue. What's been the problem is many of Congressman King's statements leading up to the hearings, which suggested that he really felt that this was a much more pervasive ideology that affected, you know, broad elements of the Muslim community than it really does.
And again, when you look at the facts, your report found a sharp decline in actual instances or attempts at terrorism in the United States since 9/11. Is that right? Well, since 2009.
Well, it fluctuated over the course of the decade. There was definitely a strong uptick in the kind of mid-2008 to mid-2010 period, which is really, you know, raised the profile of this issue, garnered the attention of intelligence and law enforcement, as an academic, you really have to look at the small numbers and try to stretch it out over a whole period. And we don't really know if that was an aberration, luck, the confluence of certain events, or if it was a trend. So far in 2011, we're 2 months and a couple weeks in, and we've had one arrest of somebody who really radicalized in Saudi Arabia and then came here as a student. So it's just very difficult with such small numbers to identify trends that are meaningful in a statistical sense, I think.
Ibrahim Musa, you also worked with the Triangle Center on Terrorism and Homeland Security, took a look at efforts to combat homegrown terrorism in the Muslim American communities in four cities across the country. Tell us what you found.
Well, I mean, we found that, you know, communities in Seattle and in Buffalo, where I went to, along with the researchers, to interview community members, found that community members were very, very well disposed towards working with law enforcement in identifying bad elements within the community. There was also an element in certain places we found that people felt that, why, even though we went into approaching what kind of measures are you taking to prevent terrorism rather than saying, who are the terrorists amongst you? Some members of the community were also offended because they felt that we were singling them out. And we had to quickly explain that this is a phenomenon that other groups are identifying, and therefore we want to be helpful in the process. But I think Congressman King's hearing today, I think, has two goals. One is that he says that he wants to, that this is a problem amongst a small group of American Muslims. And the second concern is that the lack of cooperation on the part of the Muslim community with law enforcement. Our research shows that there is a support for cooperation with law enforcement on the part of the Muslim community. In fact, elements of the Muslim community are bending over backwards because they know that any kind of terrorist act that is done by American Muslim would harm the Muslim community at large. It would put them at risk from angry members of society at large. It puts them at risk of violence and those kind of things. So that is the first thing. Second thing, that if it's a small amount of people and a small group of people, why make a mountain out of a molehill? Because and hold testimony on Congress when it's a small group, there's an inherent contradiction in the assertion.
Well, because a small group of people can cause a great amount of harm, particularly if they've announced a group like Al-Qaeda that it is now targeting Muslim men in America and is changing its strategy, as the White House seems to have suggested through its assistant, through defense spokespeople, that a small amount of people can cause a great amount of harm.
Oh, absolutely, they can. But then one has to work in such a way that one does not aid and abet that small group of people through a kind of broader kind of social image that one draws that inhibits the cooperation of the community, because what it then creates is that you targeting a particular community, and that might be there might be negative unintended consequences there. And the negative unintended consequences that I feel, given the level of Islamophobia in the United States, given the level of demonization of Muslims over last summer, that you cannot even, you know, get a mosque built blocks away from Ground Zero or in Tennessee and other places, there is something really, really dangerous happening within the country. And some of the negative unintended consequences could be that Muslims are identified as the fifth column in this country, whereas all the testimony that we heard this morning in Congress was that Muslims are law-abiding, cooperating, and doing these things. Even those people giving testimony, like Zuhdi Jasser and other people, showing that Muslims are working with law enforcement. The other positive unintended consequence of this could be, from what I've heard at congressional hearings, is that the leadership of the American Muslim community would be put on notice to pay attention to some of the issues that scholars and critical thinkers in this country have pointed out, that they have to begin to put out teachings and understandings of Islamic theology that works in an American context. In other words, an enlightened, properly informed theology that does not create a big gap between citizenship and affiliation to Islam.
Well, let me talk about how those perceptions have changed over time and the effects that it might have already had Abdullah Antepli. Last year, you were invited to give opening prayers at the U.S. House of Representatives.
Yes.
Now we're here seeing these hearings. How have things changed in your life here in Durham, and what have you perceived in terms of your perception and reception?
Things, unfortunately, have gone through a very unfortunate decline since that prayer session. It was a glimpse of hope that things were finally changing. It sort of lifted the heavy burden on the hearts and minds of many Muslim Americans and Americans in general that finally American society's ability to understand and include Islam and Muslims to the social fabric of American society was happening. But pretty much immediately after between the Park 51 controversy and the Quran burning scandal in Florida, things have taken really, really unfortunate turns that showed us things are just getting worse in our ability to understand Islam and Muslims, in our ability to recognize that American Muslims are part and parcel of American society. It's really unfortunate. This hearing is very ill-informed and very misleading. I think the Representative Keith Ellison's tears, I don't know if you watched the hearing, is the representative of that sense of disappointment, deep disappointment, that how we got here.
David Chancer, how should these hearings, you recognize, and I think everybody recognizes that there is some form of threat to the United States. How should they be framed? What would be more productive in your opinion?
Well, as Ibrahim noted, I think if you listen to the witnesses as opposed to the rhetoric from the members, you actually hear the outlines of a strategy to deal with this problem. One, I think, is that Muslim Americans must, take ownership to some degree, not blame, but ownership of an instructional program that creates a counter-narrative that can help some small numbers of vulnerable youth reject this ideology when it's presented, whether it be on the internet or some misguided recruiter who has infiltrated a community. That's the core thing that needs to be done. And then having a very robust engagement with law enforcement such that there's trust and that when an individual is headed down the wrong path, they can get an intervention. And I think one thing we need to do is to have types of interventions that don't necessarily end up landing people in jail for 35 years if they can be in some ways rehabilitated. In our report, we have a story, a positive story of one instance where really that occurred, where law enforcement was advised of somebody who had left for New York City. Parents were concerned about radicalization. They found the individual. They brought him home. They got him on the right path. He's working in a job, and he's not in jail. If we had more instances of that as being the result of interaction, and I believe there are many, but if that was more prevalent and more understood, then we could have the type of more robust cooperation that I think everybody, all those witnesses on the panel, really desired.
Ibrahim Musa, are there examples of that kind of thing happening now? We've certainly heard from witnesses that there are attempts and connections with law enforcement right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of work being done, but I think I agree with David that there's a lot of work that American Muslim leadership need to take ownership of and do a lot of work. But I also want to draw attention, Frank, to the question that that the way of combating this small group is not only a security operation. And I think one of the problems is that we only think of these issues in terms of security. There is another way of looking at these issues in terms of building trust between Muslim Americans and non-Muslim Americans. And we need to spend much more attention to that. Second thing is that there's a global forum in which these debates take place. There's also a foreign policy dimension. But just in the global context, you can well imagine how this hearing plays out in Pakistan, in Egypt, in Saudi Arabia, and other places, where the headline will be Islam is being investigated. Islam is the demonized. And I think there's a polarized perception globally about what drives terrorism globally. And I think many countries, including our country, but also countries in other parts of the world, have to take ownership about their global conduct. So, for instance, while we lament the fact that American soldiers were killed in an airport in Germany, at the same time, you know, U.S. bombs are also killing innocent children in Afghanistan. And one has to look at those stories in greater context. And I think foreign policy conduct is going to be one major element that we have to look into if we want to lower the temperature on global terrorism, which also afflicts our country.
Abdullah and Tepley, I wonder if conversely news of what's happening in Egypt and Tunisia, the democratization of the Arab and Muslim worlds, is having an effect on Americans and their understanding of Islam, a recontextualization of what it means to be Muslim.
I hope so. I mean, but unfortunately, the way those cries for more civil liberties and improvement for democratization in all these Middle Eastern countries always discussed in the United States, not always, but often discussed in the United States through our interest, our foreign policy. What does it mean for us? I think there's a major failure if you always look through our own benefits, try to understand where actually these people are coming from and what actually is good for them. We cannot always selfishly and ethnocentrically look at the world and try to understand world events through our own perspectives and lenses necessarily. I think one of the unfortunate irony is the whole world is crying for democracy, civic society, civil liberties. And through these kind of hearings and using Islam and Muslim as a tool to create a fear culture in the United States, using fear mongering against Islam and Muslims in the United States to gain political currency, which I think Representative King has been doing and others are doing, is a quite irony that we, as a source of inspiration to these democratization efforts in Egypt, Tunis, Libya, and everywhere, we are damaging carelessly and thoughtlessly our beautiful civic culture here in the United States.
David Chancer, were you about to say something?
Yeah, if I could just elaborate. The irony is we should be celebrating a decade of tremendous success.
Yes.
Al-Qaeda has been generally unsuccessful in their military operations, and they've been even more unsuccessful in their spread of their ideology. Barely anybody wants to follow what they did. And here, Al-Qaeda thought they were going to be on the vanguard of toppling what they called infidel, secular, despotic rulers in the Middle East. And look what happened. It's people who want democracy, they want jobs, more fluid economy, freedom of speech. They want more Western values to inform their own societies, or what are universal values that are just more present right now in the West than in the many parts of the Muslim world. So that's a huge irony that's happening at the same time as this, really very bitter anti-Islamic sentiment is damaging our own social fabric, as Abdullah said, in a almost, a nonsensical and an obsession and a growing, virulence to these attacks on Islam as being inconsistent with American values, where we should be, expressing to the rest of the world that these values can be harmonized and are being harmonized and can be harmonized further.
Have you been able to measure the impact of our foreign policy hearings like this? As you say, Al-Qaeda's influence on the wane, and yet these hearings will reverberate in Muslim countries around the world, our foreign policy and military policy. Have you been able to measure the impact that it's had in holding up a movement that may have been gone by now without that kind of support?
Well, making that kind of precise cause and effect is tricky. But what we do know is that support for America, anti-American sentiment, has increased in the Muslim world since 9/11. While at the same time, support for suicide bombing and support for Al-Qaeda's goals has really plummeted, principally because these countries who have elements of radicalism and Al-Qaeda-type movements, once they get infiltrated and have to experience it, they broadly reject it.
I want to thank you all for being on the program today. David Chancer, Associate Professor of the Practice of Public Policy at Duke. Ibrahim Musa, Associate Professor of Islamic Studies at Duke, and Abdullah Antepli, Muslim Chapel at Duke University and Adjunct Faculty of Islamic Studies. Thank you all. Coming up, Fear of the Unknown in the Skies. UFO investigator will join us on the State of Things. Stay tuned.